Good morning, everybody. Welcome here once more. This is Lizzie. I'm Lizzie. This is Justin. We are here for Turning Towards Life, episode 170-something. And we are here on Sunday morning, a little bit delayed because of technical issues. So apologies for that. We're here now. And we are part of Third Space. Feels important to say this morning. So we are a collective of friends and colleagues and coaches and people who do work in the development space, amongst many other things. And this is one of our offerings. So quite a while ago now, Justin, must be like 3-something years ago, we decided to begin having conversations into the world that we were having on our own. And one day on a train, Justin and I thought, hold on a second, I think the world should be listening to this as well, not just us, because it was such an interesting moment, actually, Justin. I really remember sitting opposite you on a table in a kind of ordinary UK kind of train in the middle of the countryside, I think it was somewhere, actually heading back into London, weren't we? And I remember just thinking, I love this conversation, and maybe this conversation gets to have a wider place in the world. And that's for me where there are certain moments in my life where things get born and I never forget the setting and never forget the conversation and never forget the feeling of what it was like to be there. And on reflection in this moment, I can feel the somethingness of that moment that got something born between us that we wanted to bring wider. And I really appreciate that moment happened and that it was part of the creation of this, and that so far we've reached many, many people with the kind of conversations that we like to have, that we want to have, that move us. And so I want to thank everybody for joining in with us in that train moment, in that moment of clarity that we wanted to speak with each other, but further into the world, and that we just began. We didn't have some fancy something that we sorted out for years before it, you know, we didn't have any planning meetings. We just began. And it was good enough, just the way that it was in the very beginning. And not much has changed, actually. We've just continued on and not made it difficult for ourselves. So I really appreciate the way that we've done this and that we're here. And that this week we get to bring this incredible source that Justin's brought, that when I read it, I was literally like itching with delight that we were going to be speaking about it today. So thank you, Justin, for always finding such varied, excellent sources. I'm always so grateful. And this one particularly, I am very, very glad to be delving into with you today.
Mm, thank you, Lizzie. I'm so glad to be here this morning. And it's enjoying hearing your introduction to how we began this. And I was thinking, as you were saying, so we're nearly 180, coming up to 180 weeks of doing this quite soon. So that's 90 hours of our conversation has unfolded into the world, and we've been joined by many, many people along the way. So to all of those of you who are with us live on Facebook on Sunday mornings, or watch on YouTube later, or on our website, or on the podcast, welcome. And I'm terrifically excited about this source as well. So I'll have to say a little bit about it by way of context. So there's a new book out by the writer George Saunders, and George Saunders is well known in the world recently because a novel of his about 3 years ago won the Booker Prize, which is this big international prize for novels, a novel called Lincoln in the Bardo. And this new book, A Swim in the Pond in the Rain, came out only a couple of weeks ago. It was published this month. And I was taken by loving George Saunders and loving the title, given that swimming in a pond is a great love for me, and in fact one which I can't do at the moment because of the coronavirus pandemic and the lockdown. So the structure of this book is that he's taken six short stories by Russian authors. So the famous Russian authors, Tolstoy and Chekhov and Gogol and another one, Turgenev, I think. And the stories themselves are all absolutely extraordinary. They're really well chosen. And they're stories that George Saunders teaches. He also teaches writing. And so he's taught these stories for very many years as part of a writing class that he does, where he teaches. And then after each of the stories, there's he writes about the story and about what makes it so brilliant. And his writing about the stories isn't technical writing about literary theory or anything like that. He's doing something incredibly just human and humane, which is, what is it about this story that draws us in? How can we care about these characters? And what's going on in the story that touches us? And in every one of his pieces of writing about the stories, he says something extraordinary. So this is just one of quite a number that I've sort of got earmarked, and who knows, might find their way into our conversation over time. And the thing to know about it is, it was hard. I've made a couple of adjustments to it so it can be more intelligible for us who are not reading the book. But the thing that's useful to know is that there is a character in here named Vasily. And the thing to know about Vasily is that the story covers his last day. He dies in the story, and he's lived a life which has had him right in the middle of it all the time. He's essentially been very uninterested in the lives of other people. And he's been able to do that partly because he's got lots of material resources and power and stuff, and so it hasn't been a big deal for him that he hasn't cared about other people. And a great big change happens for him right at the moment where he dies, and this is what Saunders is writing about. Okay, so here's the source, which if you want to find it, you can find on our Facebook group, Turning Towards Life. You can find on our website, turningtowards.life, and we'll always post it with the notes on the podcast episode as well. So it's called All the Way Ourselves Again. Transformation, when it happens not through the total remaking of a person or the replacement of our habitual energy with some pure new energy, but by a redirection of our same old energy. What a relief this model of transformation is. What else do we have but what we were born with and have always thus far been served and imprisoned by? Say you're a world-class warrior. If that worry energy gets directed at extreme personal hygiene, you're neurotic. If it gets directed at climate change, you're an intense visionary activist. We don't have to become an entirely new person to do better. Our view just has to be readjusted, our natural energy turned in the right direction. We don't have to swear off our powers or repent of who we are, or what we like to do, or are good at doing. Those are our horses. We just have to hitch them to the right sled. What kept Vasily so small all of his life? What's keeping us so small now? He wasn't small, actually. He was infinite. He had access to as much great love as any of our beloved spiritual heroes. What was it that finally jolted him out of it? Well, it was truth. He saw that his idea of himself was untrue. His idea that he was himself was untrue. All those years, he was only a part of himself. He had made that part, was always making it and defending it with his thoughts and his pride and his desire to win, which continually separated him, Vasily, from everything else. And as that entity, Vasily, faded away, what was left behind discerned the fallacy and rejoined the great non-Vasily of it all. If we could reverse that process, what we would see would be a mind gradually reasserting a series of lies. You're separate, you're central, you're correct, and go forth and prove that you are better, that you are the best. And then he would be all the way himself again.
We don't have to become an entirely new person to do better. Our view just has to be readjusted, our natural energy turned in the right direction. We don't have to swear off our powers or repent of who we are or what we like to do or are good at doing. Those are just our horses. We have to hitch them to the right sled. What kept Vasily so small in his life? What is keeping us so small now? He wasn't small, actually. He was infinite. He had access to as much great love as any of our beloved spiritual heroes. What was it that finally jolted him out of it? Well, it was truth. He saw that his idea of himself was untrue. His idea that he was himself was untrue. All of those years, he was only part of himself. He had made that part, was always making it, and defending it, with his thoughts and his pride and his desire to win, which continually separated him, Vasily, from everything else. As that entity, Vasily, faded away, what was left behind discerned the fallacy and rejoined the great non-Vasily of it all. If we could reverse the process, what we would see would be a mind gradually reasserting a series of lies. You are separate, you are central, and you are correct, and go forth and prove that you are better, that you are the best. And then he would be all the way himself again.
Thank you, Lizzie. Well, there's so much here. I'm really, the bit that I hear that I find so inviting, well, I find all of it inviting, but it's actually what he says right at the start, that when we transform, that what really happens is, it's not that we change ourselves into a new something, but we redirect what's already here in some way.
Yeah.
And that even something that we might label as a problem, like worrying about everything, when turned appropriately, can become a great blessing in the world. And the shift that George Saunders points to so beautifully in here is, it's really that we believe the story of our own smallness. We take ourselves to be, we end up in a story about ourselves which we defend so strongly. I am just this, I am this way. And what a relief it might be. So here's the thing, I mean, this is just a huge, huge subject. But I can feel how the move is a move, it's a relaxing of ourselves rather than a trying to dominate ourselves. So if I can start to see so many of the ways in which I've taken myself to be, and I really recognize Vasily's errors here. I'm separate. I'm actually right in the middle of things, like because like the whole world I only ever experienced with me actually in the middle of it. Like my body's right, things near and far to me, and all of that. I'm basically right in my thoughts, and I've got to prove something. That all of those conspire, and I really know these in myself. They conspire to do a couple of things. So one is that they keep me, when I'm this way, they keep me really self-centered. Like I have to defend myself, I have to protect myself, I have to make sure that I never get embarrassed or ashamed or anything. And they keep me separate from...
Yeah.
Oh, and this is the thing I was trying to say. And maintaining that involves an absolute ton of effort.
Yeah.
We have to work so hard. Like I know the part of myself when I get identified with it that works so hard to make sure that I never get abandoned. That's a big one of these, of the Vasily things in me. I'm always at risk of being abandoned. Therefore, I am the one who's always at risk of being abandoned. Therefore, work really, 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 really hard to make sure that nobody's ever upset, nobody's ever disappointed, that I never let anybody down, all of those kind of things. And that is just a giant effort to keep going. And underneath, for me, I know the worry about being abandoned is a really, really deep care about people finding ways to be in peaceful relationship with one another, like openness and care for one another, being able to listen to one another. That's the deeper something that's here. And what an invitation it is, I think, Lizzie, to find out that our work is to point ourselves, is to find out what our essential goodness is, and then to point it in such a way that it helps us to undo our sense of separateness and being central, and then it can come out into the world in some way that it hasn't yet found full expression. It's transformation by letting go and letting our fullness into the world and undoing our defensiveness, rather than transformation by sort of effort and trying to become a new kind of all of that.
So enlivening to hear you read this and reflect, Justin. And it's such a big feeling for me as well. So the when you were reading, I could feel this emotion rolling through me of the paragraph that begins, "What kept Vasily so small all of his life?" You know, what you're saying, you know, in some ways it's like a really amazing kind of philosophical approach. And what an amazing way to be framing development, to be talking about what this kind of inner work is and outer work that we're up to in the world. Such an amazing way of talking about it. And then it also kind of hits me in this place of, I think it's a kind of grief about all the ways that we do the making. You know, when he says he was always making it and defending it, always making and defending what then get identified as lies. We've got so much invested in this reassertion, as he says, of the separateness and the centrality and the correctness and the proving and the betterness and the competition. And it doesn't have to be that way. We don't have to keep investing that much energy in that. There's a really good reason here to just see what we can do to identify, be in relationship with our goodness. And that kind of contact with ourselves can dissolve so much of what causes us so much pain. So I'm loving how this orients back to us. You know, it leaves me feeling like I'm capable rather than a victim of a load of stuff. It's like, oh, if I'm remaking all the time these things, and by seeing my goodness, I could have a glimpse of what it is to put down the remaking and hitch myself to the right horse, because that's enough. You know, who I am is enough to guide me and orient me to which horse I need to hitch myself to, so that whatever it is that's my goodness in the world gets to be liberated into the world. And so I can take action that's informed by my essential goodness, my essential qualities of me, that yes, can get tied up in all kinds of distorted shenanigans. But it doesn't mean that all of that is wrong. It's like the essence of it gets to be seen through the distortion. I can identify my essence through my stuff that's causing me pain or causing difficulty. In that is the gold of me, that I can, in a way, stop telling myself lies about. And find in that distortion my who-ness. And then I've got some choices. Like I can go, oh, okay, I see the way that I'm defending myself. I see the way that I'm continually remaking that dynamic again and again. And then I can see if I can put that down. And so this sentence of, you know, what was left behind discerned the fallacy and joined the great non-Vasily of it all, feels so beautiful to know that what's here at the end of it all has a capacity to see what was a fallacy. Like, truth is a place. You know, truth of our who-ness, of our, you know, the depth and breadth and mystery of our identity is an intelligent something that can discern the distortion and identify it in that way. And the non-Vaseliness of everything, as in the non-separate self, is available. It's here. It's we are part of that. I just feel so glad that these words are being said, and it resonates in my body. It's like, oh yes, that's what the thing is. And it's really a really big feeling. And so, and I love that it comes from such a, so I don't know George Saunders, and I feel completely compelled to start reading this, but I do know some of those, a couple of those stories. And I feel like it's such a credible way in to this huge conversation. You know, these, this story of Vasily being a way in to this huge conversation feels like I can talk to even the most cynical person with this. You know, I can have a conversation that wouldn't already ordinarily be able to be had because of where it's coming from. And I want to appreciate that for the choice of the source, and for George Saunders referencing something, you know, so kind of culturally esteemed, if you like. And this is what he takes from it, and this is what he brings from it. I just find that really, really, really moving.
He's really deeply committed to seeing people's goodness. And one of the things I was thinking whilst you were talking, Lizzie, is, and I know that this is really at the foundation of the coaching that we do and that we teach as well, is that the act of seeing someone's goodness and what it's up to in the world, and also how they've got trapped in the distortions of it, being able to name that can really help us.
Yeah.
Because there's something you'll see when you read the story, the Tolstoy story that he's writing about here is called Master and Man, and Vasily is the master. And it's a snowy day, terrible snowstorm is coming in, and Vasily is desperate to make a purchase of some land. He's so obsessed by being better and richer and everything by everyone else that he can't imagine not making this purchase. And so he makes a series of terrible decisions, essentially to keep heading out into the snow with his servant. And at every moment in the story, I can feel in myself that terrible sinking feeling of wanting to say to Vasily, don't do this. You don't need to go out into the snow tonight. I know you're desperate to make the sale, but if you go, something terrible is going to happen. And Tolstoy keeps on presenting us with all these moments where you can feel Vasily's desperation. He's so desperate. And it works out terribly for both of them. And I really know that desperation in myself. That's the feeling of, I've made this part of me and I have to defend it at all costs. I have to be, this is the way I have to be. And it takes so much effort. And I'm over the years coming to know what that effort feels like in my body. It's like a constant running of some kind of machine of hypervigilance that I never get, you know, I never get shown that I'm something other than what I've taken myself to be, and make sure I never get wounded and I never get attacked. And I'm always like solid in my sense of myself, even if the sense of myself is something I don't like very much. It's like, no, this is the way I am.
Mm-hmm.
So Tolstoy does an amazing job in this story of catching that sort of sense of the, how desperate we get and how much it cuts us off from our own goodness. And the gift in your speaking for me, and in George Saunders' writing, is this sense of maybe the difficult and necessary move is to start to relax our desperation.
Mm-hmm.
And then we can really do with people who love us enough, if we can find them,
mm-hmm.
or have them around us, who love us enough to say, I can really see what you're up to. I can see what you're trying to be in your life, and I can see the goodness that there is there. And who can wonder with us about how that goodness could be turned in different directions, rather than trying to, I suppose for me, the fearful parts of me go, if I don't keep up this desperate worrying, I'll be destroyed. There won't be anything left of me.
Yeah.
Instead of, if I don't keep up this desperate worrying, maybe something much more of me that's already here can come through. I've just been, as Saunders said, I've just been making a part of myself as if it was all of myself.
Yes.
So there's a great act of letting go here that we have to do, that we could do. It would be like a giant out-breath to go, what if I didn't have to defend myself all the time? What if I didn't have to be so right about myself all the time? What if I could enter that tender territory of really not knowing and yet not abandoning myself? Which means, what would happen if I could find that of myself that would love what's already here, and that of what existence is that would love of what? So there's a sort of trusting that we'll get held in something.
Yeah.
And then what if I could learn to be that for other people as well, so that around me they had more of a chance of doing this and not just being fueled in the endless cycle that we get taught and that also we sort of get marketed into, which is keep being desperate, because the more desperate you get, that's going to be your salvation, is the result of all this desperation.
Oh gosh, Justin, it's really strongly bringing up an experience that I remember really clearly in my life of going, there's something wrong here and I don't know what to do, but I've got to stop some things. And I remember there were some people who kind of said, oh great, stopping is great. And other people were like, what are you doing? Don't stop. Don't stop. You have to keep going. You have to keep this thing going, because otherwise what's going to happen to you? I remember one friend of mine getting really, really cross with me because I'd already started a job in London and it was in my early 20s. This sounds so ridiculous to me now. And I think I was having dinner with her and she said to me, you can't stop, because what about your pension? I was like, oh God, I haven't thought about a pension, did it? And I had this whole thing of like, oh gosh, I have to be on this because there's something that I wouldn't be attending to if I didn't stop. You know, if I stop and take stock, I will lose something that's really important for my safety in the world. And I remember feeling like, oh yes, yeah, you're right. You know, I don't know about that. I'll have to think, you know. And then I was thinking, hold on a second, let me just gather myself again. Where's the place I'm coming from that needs to stop? Because that's much stronger than the need for a pension when I was 23 or whatever it was. And I guess like this all broke down for me kind of quite early. So I didn't have a very sophisticated way of thinking. It was like being kind of shot into some really big place. I remember feeling very, very vulnerable and like I didn't know anything about anything anymore. But I just remember that feeling of, no, you have to keep desperate. You have to keep climbing. You have to keep going, because this is what life is. And so my wish that arose, which was to stop and just think or go somewhere different or do something differently, put something down that wasn't to do with separateness, control, correctness, you know, the kind of broader narratives that get borne out in different ways. It wasn't to do with that stuff. So most people were really triggered by my doing it. And I had this, it's so funny what's coming. I had this also when I decided I didn't really want to drink alcohol anymore in my late 20s. And then I got such stick. It brought up there's lots of stuff around that. Obviously it's a big, big conversation, but I remember that feeling of, no, you're stepping out of some kind of cultural norm, which weirdly is, I don't know if it's, well, I don't know, it seems to be everywhere, which is somehow if we're doing this social activity together, that makes lots okay. And I was stepping out of that stream and saying, no, I don't need that to be okay anymore. I've kind of looked at lots of things and realized what I was using it for, and I didn't want to do it anymore. But the pull back by the broader narratives that are very, 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 I guess, like blind to the way that these things are remade. So when you stop remaking the narrative, there's so many pulls back, which are filled with fear and very much deep kind of dedication, understandable dedication to the separateness and the control and the correctness and the proving and the striving. And so it's a really big thing to do this. And I feel so grateful that this writing exists, because it's another place that isn't negating a really deep feeling I have of this being true.
Mm.
And that began such a long time ago now, but it was a really small flame. And if I didn't have people around me who were saying, yes, stop. And there were only a few, maybe one even, you know, it was like, if I didn't have that, how do we do this? Because this is the norm. The norm is a life of correctness, separateness, us being central and proving and better and bestness and all that stuff. And so when we step out of it in any way, it's a really big deal to have somewhere to come that goes, yes, we understand that relaxation is a good thing, that you can put things down for a while and you can think and feel and see what's here, instead of just staying in the normal pace, the normal what is there to do here narrative, the story of what it means to be a person in the world. So I just feel really grateful, actually, of in this moment, of all of the ways that my life has said yes to the essential part of me having a way of being more fully in the world, rather than the part of me that is more deeply bought into and remaking the narratives all the time.
Yeah. Well, it's this whole book is a book about the ways that we remake stories about ourselves and how many of those stories don't serve either our own lives or the lives of those around us, and how they might serve. Also, this book is committed to something that's really so strongly implied in what you just said, Lizzie, which is the beauty of being a human being that is underneath all of our desperation.
Mm.
And the possibility that we might spot our own desperation and our certainty and all the moves that we make to keep ourselves defended, and that we might, that the thing that we can fall into when we let go is that there is something really precious and alive and beautiful is present just next to what we've established so far.
Yeah.
And so it leaves me thinking about what it is to have a life where we can let go enough of that tightness, that the part of us that in this story gets left behind in Vasily, the part that can discern the fallacy and rejoins the great non-Vasily of it all. What is it to have people around us who can help us do that? What is it to have practices that can help us do that, so that we don't just have the practices that keep us desperate and spinning and grabbing and grasping and defending?
Yeah.
And such a joy to be able to bring George Saunders, because this book is a great big testament to what it is to go that way. It's a reminder, like you say, of what it is to go that way, and a great gift to the world that this book exists. So I want to encourage everybody who loves reading to give this wonderful, amazing book a go, to see what comes from it. Amazing. And we will be back, all being well, technical problems notwithstanding and all of that, we will be back next week at the same time at 9 o'clock UK time. And so look forward to seeing everyone then.
Thank you, Justin. Thank you, everybody. See you next week.
Thanks, Lizzie. Bye-bye.